When Kubo and the Two Strings opened in theaters this past August, it was one of the best reviewed movies of the year. This epic story of a young boy on a quest to uncover his legacy has been called everything from an animated masterpiece to a new classic. It features the voices of Charlize Theron, Ralph Fiennes, Matthew McConaughey, George Takei, Rooney Mara, as well as Art Parkinson of Game of Thrones fame, and it has just been released on Blu-ray, DVD, and on demand. So I'm happy to welcome Travis Knight, its producer and director, here to tell us all about the process of bringing it to the screen. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You've been the lead animator on The Box Trolls, Paranorman, Coraline. But what, after having worked in animation for two decades, made you choose to make your debut as a director with this film?
Yeah, I've been working in animation for a good long while, and I've done a lot of different jobs in that period of time. You know, when I started as a production assistant, and then I was doing work as a scheduler, as a coordinator, ultimately I wanted to be a stop-motion animator. That was something I wanted to do since I was a kid, and in fact, that was my upbringing. I loved animation since I was a child and would do it in my parents' garage or their basement. And so I'd pretty much done it my whole life. And once I became a stop motion animator, it was just, you know, I started doing more and more different things. And so this story in particular, it really resonated with me for a number of different reasons.
Now, can you explain stop motion animation? Isn't it incredibly demanding and difficult?
Yeah, it's awful.
Why does it continue to have such a strong appeal?
Well, I think there is something that's kind of oddly primal about it. When you look back at the history of film, stop motion animation was one of the first techniques for visual effects that was ever invented. I mean, when Georges Méliès was sending rockets to the moon, those were some of the same techniques that they were using in the earliest days of cinema. So, you know, the basic idea is pretty simple. You have a puppet on a set with lights and a camera, and a frame at a time, an animator is moving this object, taking a picture, moving it a little bit more, taking another picture, coaxing a performance out of it.
You're doing pretty much frame by frame?
Frame by frame, yeah. One frame at a time, bringing these things to life. And I think that there is something that's really primal and beautiful about it. It's almost evocative of a child's plaything being brought to life. Like, I think, you know, you think back when you're playing with your dolls or your action figures and you're engaging in imaginative play as a kid, and that's kind of what stop motion is like.
Has the technology changed at all? For example, since you did Coraline?
Yeah, I mean, the technology has evolved dramatically. So we've been, Leica's been around for a little over 10 years now. And at the
time,
that's the studio that we made these films. That's right. And so when we first did Coraline, there were a lot of firsts. We started doing 3D printing, you know, stereoscopic photography, digital capture systems, laser cutting. We were using all these different technology, merging it with this old school art and craft in ways that had never been done before. But we were just scratching the surface. When you see what we've been able to do on Kubo, where we're able to tell this big epic story and this big fantasy, that was something we couldn't have even imagined 10 years ago.
How long had you been looking for the right project for you to direct?
Well, you know, we're always looking for interesting stories to tell. You know, I think a lot of people look at animation as a genre in and of itself. But the way we approach animation is that it's just a powerful visual medium that you can use to tell virtually any kind of story. And so that's how we look at these things. We want to tell stories that are thought-provoking, that are emotionally resonant, and that, you know, that enrich people's lives. And so when we started developing this project, it really hit home with me. It felt like it was connected to my life, and that was something that I needed to do in order to take the helm of a film.
And you've said that there's more of you in this film than in anything you've ever done.
Yeah, that's right.
It can't be too autobiographical.
Well, you know, film is real life wrapped in metaphor, and so, you know, you're telling stories that are in a heightened, stylized version of reality. It's an abstraction on some level, but in order to give something resonance and meaning, you know, you really have to make it intimate. And paradoxically, the more personal, the more intimate you make something, the more universal it becomes. And so as we started to develop the story, you start drawing from aspects of your own life. You start drawing from your experiences with your family or from your own childhood or your experiences with your children. And so you start weaving that into the narrative, and it becomes very, very personal.
And this is an original story?
Yeah, that's right. We developed it at the studio.
The young Kubo is a storyteller himself. His origami comes to life. And from the beginning, we never understand where his abilities have come from.
Yeah, you know, it's a film that where magic is part of the world, and in some way it's sort of a metaphor for childhood, how when we're kids, you know, kind of magic is all around us, and then, you know, ultimately we cross that Rubicon from childhood to adulthood, and then everything changes. And so it's kind of a heightened, abstracted version of that.
Now, you mentioned your animation studio, Leica, which has been around for about 10 years.
Yeah.
Always based in Oregon, mm-hmm. not in Seattle or in Hollywood?
No, we are in the rain-drenched, patchouli-oiled armpit of the Pacific Northwest. That's where I was born and raised, so it made sense that that's where we started the company.
But is it easy to attract people who know how to do stop motion?
Well, there's not a whole lot of people who do stop motion in the world. It's a very strange way to make a living. So it draws, you know, very unusual, unique people. And so what we end up doing is we end up scouring the planet to find the talent. And so when you come to our shop in Portland, Oregon, it's like a United Colors of Benetton. There are people from every corner of the planet that work at our studio.
I assume quite a few from Japan. Where does the Japanese aspect of Kubo's inspiration come from?
Well, you know, it's set in a mythical version of ancient Japan, and it was inspired by the films of Akira Kurosawa and Hayao Miyazaki, as well as great manga comics like Lone Wolf and Cub. Those were things that I loved when I was growing up, and this was an opportunity for us to pay tribute to a culture, a society, a filmic tradition that we typically don't see in Western animation.
And also draw upon the look of woodblock printing.
That's right, yeah. The whole look of the film was intended to feel like it's a living, breathing woodblock print. And the beginning of the movie, we have this woman who's coursing through the water, and there's just an enormous wave that rises up in front of her. And in fact, that's meant to be evocative of
Hokusai's
great wave off Kanagawa. Exactly, yeah.
My guest is Travis Knight, the producer and director of Kubo and the Two Strings, and now available on Blu-ray, DVD, and on demand. Were you surprised by the demands as a director as opposed to being a producer or a lead animator?
Yeah, it's a different kind of a thing. Now, I've been as part of the production process for 20 years, and so as an animator, what you end up doing is you're focusing on really fine detail, the minutiae, the granularity of things, sometimes at the expense of the bigger picture. You know, as a producer, you have to keep the big picture in mind all the time, but as a director, you have to have both of those things, the detail and the big picture at the same time.
Were you the one who had to decide on who to pair, which actors to pair with which characters?
Yeah, that's ultimately the director's decision, yes.
Aren't the guides in Japanese folklore typically male? Yet you made Monkey Charlize Theron. Very strong character also.
Yeah, with all of our films, it's been very important to us that we have strong female characters. You know, I've had strong female figures in my life, my entire life, and it's something that we have not seen a tradition of in Western animation. And so for this, it was a delightful subversion to have, you know, in folkloric tradition, often the mentor figure is male, and we wanted it to, because of what the themes of were the story and this relationship between a boy and his mother, we wanted it to be a female figure.
And who supplied the voice of Kubo, the child?
Kubo is a young actor named Art Parkinson, and he is just an extraordinary young actor. He had to carry the weight of this film on his shoulders, where everyone around him had decades of experience and, you know, trophy cases full of Oscars and BAFTAs and Golden Globes, and he had to hold his own, and he does with absolute dignity and grace.
Was he already in Game of Thrones when you first cast him?
Yeah, we first met Art when he was around 11 years old, and he's around the same age as Kubo is in this film, and yet by the time we got to the end of the process, he was 15, so he couldn't do the voice anymore. His voice had already dropped, like, multiple octaves.
Did the actors see footage from the film as they were shooting it?
Yeah, so we capture the voices of the actors before we shoot any animation, because the vocal performance that the actor provides is the inspiration for what the animator does physically. And so, but partway through that, you record the actors over the course of about a year and a half. And so as you're getting to the later sessions, you start to show the actors how the animation is coming together.
But you also have to find actors who can express themselves through their voices, because many actors rely on body movement to create a character. But here, in a way, you're doing radio.
That's
radio
exactly
drama.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in an animated film, you know, there are basically two parts to a performance. There's a performance that you hear, and there's the performance that you see. In a live-action film, those things are bound together. But in animation, the only thing that the actor provides that the audience can appreciate is the vocal performance. And so they have to be able to convey the entire range of human emotion using just that one instrument, just their voice. And then that then provides the inspiration for the physical performance the animator does.
Which sequence took you the longest? Some of these things look like they must have been really complicated to put together, especially in stop motion.
No, I mean, stop motion is filmmaking at the speed of a glacier. It is so slow. It took us 5 years to make this movie. And there's a lot of, you know, really big, ambitious stuff that we did that has never been seen in stop motion before. We have this enormous, epic battle at sea during this raging storm. That sequence alone took us a year and a half to shoot. It was painful. But when we see it on the screen, it's pretty beautiful.
And then you animated origami flying through the air.
Yeah.
Without strings. You just...
No, we end up using little metallic rigs that are, that support the structure as they're flying through the air, and then after the fact, we paint that stuff out in compositing.
And then you have to do things like your characters have lanky hair, some of them, and the hair has to move around on top of their lips are moving, their eyes are moving, their bodies are moving, and their hair is moving.
Their hair is moving. The cloth is moving. They're, you know, the inside of these garments, these costumes that our costume designer creates, they look more like little machines than they do like clothing, because they have little wires, little metal arms in them to have them drape properly or to drag. And it's the same thing with the hair. The hair that we use in this film is actually human hair that we comb silicon through and then put wire and glue to make it animatable so it can move a frame at a time.
And so the costumes are also a way of telling us something about the eternal state, the internal state of the characters that are wearing them.
Yeah, every filmmaking choice, from color to lens choice to music to costume, is all a part of a piece that informs the emotional experience that the audience is going through.
Have you ever considered trying CG?
Well, CG is a part of our process. It's a blending of technology. So it's hand-drawn animation, stop-motion animation, and CG animation. I love that blend. I love that big roiling gumbo of all those different techniques at play. And I think that's one of the reasons why our movies look unlike anything else.
So you say this thing took you 5 years to do.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that means that you're in the middle of a long process on your next film.
Yeah, we're working on multiple productions at any given time. We're knee-deep in production on our next film, which will be out sometime in 2018, which for us is right around the corner.
Were you surprised by the kind of reaction this film received?
Yeah, you know, we work in an insular bubble for so long. You know, you develop these things, you work on these things as a community for a long period of time without anybody in the outside seeing it. And we don't do test screenings, we don't do focus groups. So when the film comes out, that's the first time we know how people are going to react to it. And it's been incredibly heartwarming to see how people respond to it, because this film really is a labor of love.
Do you wish you could sometimes reveal some of the secrets as how you pull off some of these things?
We do. I mean, we document every step of the process as we're making the movies. I mean, when I was a kid, I loved filmmaking so much, I wanted to know how it was done. And so for that, you know, those young aspiring filmmakers, we always try to have stuff on the DVD, the behind-the-scenes footage, these little vignettes where we show how we made the film, because I think that, and for certain kinds of people, I think that enhances the experience.
It was released in August, got some awards, but it's still getting awards.
Yeah, no, we just received the National Board of Review award for Best Animated Feature. It's pretty amazing.
Travis Knight is the producer and director of Kubo and the Two Strings. It is produced by the company he is the president CEO of, Leica, and is now available on Blu-ray, DVD, and on demand. And I thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. It was great being here.